Things happen fast on the street. When you're driving, your speed can feel slow. But if you hit someone, it's terrifyingly fast. Drivers, look for pedestrians and cyclists, and slow your turns to 5 miles per hour. Speeding ruins lives. Slow down. This message brought to you by the New York City Vision Zero Initiative.
Hi, New York. It's Dr. Vossen, the city's doctor. The holidays are my favorite time of year for gathering with our friends and loved ones. So with COVID-19, the flu, and RSV spreading, here are 5 health tips from me to you so you can enjoy the holidays safely. 1. Get the new COVID-19 booster. Everyone over 5, and especially those over 65, or who have a chronic health condition, should get the new booster right away. It protects against the variants of COVID-19 making people sick today. 2. Get your annual flu shot. You can safely get your flu and COVID-19 shots at the same time. 3. Wear a mask in crowds. Masks slow the spread of airborne illness. It's not an all-the-time thing, but for when you're around a lot of people indoors. 4. Stay home if you're sick and get tested for COVID-19. Talk to your provider or call 212-COVID-19 for Paxlovid or other treatment options. And 5. And as always, keep those hands clean. Spread cheer, not COVID or the flu, New Yorkers. After all we've been through, we all deserve a healthy and peaceful holiday.
That message brought to you by the New York City Department of Health. This is WBAI New York.
On the count.
The U.S. prison system incarcerates approximately 2.3 million people, the highest number of any industrialized nation, while prisons remain one of the largest industries in the country. My people inside and out, where you at? You're listening to 99.5 FM WBAI. This radio show is called On the Count, the Prison and Criminal Legal System Reform Report. My name is Andre Ward, and as always, excited to join you this morning and happy to know that we here again are on the count to be able to come to you, those who remain behind the prison gates and walls, to offer news, commentary, and analyses around criminal legal reform issues. And we're thankful to be here. It's a beautiful day, although cold outside. But as always, we're grateful to be able to be in advocacy and activist mode representing the issues that are most important to you. And obviously, we're joined by the On the Count Collective and really thankful for them. And we have Harmony and Madi with us this morning and just want to check in with them and find out how folk are doing. Harmony, how are you feeling this morning?
Grand rising to everyone. I am fired up and motivated as usual, shouting out all those who are in Rikers, Crossroads, Horizon, upstate in Bedford, at Taconic, Avion, and other places where people are listening in the federal places for women. And of course, to my gentlemen this morning, I'm feeling well, and I hope that everyone else is feeling well, excited about our show this morning and excited about the news and the updates that we have of things that are unfolding and things that have happened. Thank you so much, my brother. Shout out to you and our engineer and my sister, Marty. Come on, Marty.
Hey, hey, good morning, everybody. I am doing very, very well. Also excited for today's show. We're going to have some really important guests discussing some topics and some really powerful updates. So stay tuned and stay with us.
Absolutely. And we'll get right into it. On a city level, you know, there's a lot that's happening. And currently, one of the major things that's being focused on and what's happening on Rikers Island. And 19 people have died after being held in New York City's troubled jail, which is Rikers Island, this year, like putting 2022 of this year on track to be the deadliest year in nearly a decade. And so the death toll has mounted even, you know, as officials have rushed to implement reforms to kind of stave off the threat of a federal court takeover. And we know that on December 11th, Edgardo Mejias, who was 39 years old, died at the Anna M. K. Cross Center, which is the jail that's on Rikers Island, making him the 19th person that's died this year. And today we have guests to talk about what's happening on Rikers Island, the conditions there, and what are some of the outcomes that have to happen, right, to ensure that people are safe and well. And we have folks from Freedom Agenda, on, which is Darren Mack and his guests, Anna Pastoresa. And then we also have folk from the Catal Center for Health, Equity, and Justice, if I said that in the right order, Melanie Dominguez, and ultimately we have Henry Simmons that joins us today. So I want to bring all of you together just for a conversation to talk about that. And followed by this conversation, we'll have some updates on some statewide actions as it relates to policy reform work, as well as the city. And then we have a couple of announcements that's coming, from our sister, who is the mother of the Central Park, one of the Central Park Five members, to make a real important announcement about that. So let's jump right into it. And I'll start with Darren. Now, Darren, you have been doing this work with Urban Justice Center and Freedom Agenda around Rikers Island. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, what has happened there and like, what are the major issues on Rikers Island? Darren?
Yes, thank you so much. And thank you so much to the On Account audience for having me this morning. You know, my name is Darren Mack. I'm a co-director at Freedom Agenda, which is an organization dedicated to organizing people and communities directly impacted by incarceration to achieve decarceration and system transformation. So, yes, as you mentioned, you know, just recently, Edgardo Mejias, 39 years old, died on Rikers Island. You know, basically, you know, he was delivered a death sentence without a trial. You know, this year, in 2022, has been the most deadliest years in the Department of Corrections history, 19 deaths, you know, but thanks to the work of people, you know, directly impacted by the brutality of Rikers, family members of loved ones who experienced Rikers and or lost loved ones on Rikers and our allies, you know, New York has a legal obligation to close the jails on Rikers by August 2027 and plans in place to both reduce incarceration by 75%. But we can't leave thousands of people in the current conditions of Rikers for five more years. As we mentioned, this year alone, 19 people have lost their lives in DOC custody. There have been 35 deaths since January of last year. You know, we need to reduce incarceration now, or we are on pace to lose more people, you know, and with thousands more destroyed by the abuse and neglect. It's been chronic staff absenteeism, lack of accountability to staff on Rikers Island has driven this crisis to so much deaths. And that's why we call on people to get involved. If you have a family member on Rikers Island, if you experience on Rikers Island, get involved with this movement so we can really address this crisis. There's so many things that have to be done on all levels.
Thank you, Darren, for that, too. And then we're going to, you know, Melanie, I know, you know, the Catal Center for Health Equity and Justice, you all have been have done some work in the past about Rikers Island and have recently had a rally. And so talk to our listening audience about, you know, why were you all rallying on the steps of City Hall on Tuesday?
Absolutely. Thank you, Andre. And good morning, everyone. So my name is Melanie. I'm the senior community organizer with the Catal Center. And just for everyone listening in, we do work around ending mass criminalization, mass incarceration, and ending the war on drugs, all while building the leadership and organizing capacity of neighborhood residents to effectively drive and shape real change. And so the rally that we did outside at the steps of City Hall on December 13 was put on by many of our members who are impacted by the crisis at Rikers Island. And so one of the things that we wanted to make clear is that the city council members cannot get away with not holding the mayor accountable. The mayor, under the mayor's administration, Eric Adams, we have seen how catastrophic it has been in terms of the conditions at Rikers Island. There's been a lot of mismanagement. Like Darren mentioned, 19 people have passed away in city jails, and the mayor continues to advocate and push for more people to be held in city jails. And by more people, it's Black and brown folks. Just this past month, he released a mental health plan, which that's what he calls it, where now there's going to be a stronger NYPD presence in New York streets, in New York City streets. And one of the things that he has mentioned is that he wants to have the NYPD give them the authority to involuntarily detain New Yorkers and force them into treatment. What does this mean? What this means is that New Yorkers who are experiencing homelessness are going to have more interactions with the NYPD. And we all know what that looks like. That looks like people are going to be sent right back to Rikers Island, put in city jails without being offered the help that they actually need. And so this is some of the things that the mayor has been doing. He's also attacked bail reform, even though we all know studies have shown that it has no correlation in terms of crimes. And as a whole, in New York City, in New York State, crimes has taken a downward, it has gone down. And so we need to, as a society and as a community, we need to know and realize that the mayor has made it his agenda. He has turned his back on Black and brown communities, and we need to hold him accountable. He needs to shut down Rikers. And so that was our underlying demand at the rally that we held earlier this month, that the mayor must cut the city's jail population, shut down Rikers, and invest in things that actually bring real community safety, like housing, healthcare, education, and jobs. We all know that. And we need to remind him of that, and we need to hold him accountable.
Yeah, and you know, I want to turn to Anna now. And Anna, you know, you come to this too out of deep concern about this. Talk to us about why this matters to you. The changing the conditions there, making sure that Rikers closes. Talk to us about that.
Hello, good morning. Thank you so much, Andre, and everyone, to have me on the count. And yes, the reason why I think this is very important, it touches me personally, because my son spent 6 years on Rikers Island waiting for trial, which is an extreme amount of time to be there waiting around for what is his constitutional right to have a speedy trial. During the 6 years, not only he was there and underwent a lot of abuse, and you probably you cannot imagine what he went through and what I went through visiting him every weekend for 6 years. And at the time, there were probably about 10,000 people on Rikers Island, and then they got reduced a little. Now they are starting to grow again, the population on Rikers. And it touches me personally because I have witnessed violence myself as a visitor. I witnessed abuse by Department of Corrections towards visitors and incarcerated people. And at this point, people are dying. They were dying then. Now they're dying at a high rate, which is intolerable. And the mayor needs to reduce the number of people in DOC custody. That's the only way to get out of this hell that is plaguing New York City. We need to reduce people in custody. That's what the mayor must do. And of course, in order to do that, he needs to prioritize investments to reduce incarceration. That means to incentivize supporting housing, to put money and resources and focus on treatment of youth services, education, just like Melanie said. We need to invest in communities. And that's the way to reduce the population on Rikers Island. You cannot send to Rikers Island people who are mentally ill or people who have drug issues and they have other type of challenges that need to be addressed, not by incarceration. Therefore, if the mayor wants to be successful, he knows what he needs to do. He needs to reduce the population of Rikers Island, reduce the number of people in custody, people who are not supposed to be in custody. They're supposed to be into programs. They're supposed to be helped. They need assistance in every different kind of way and not by punishment and ultimately by death. Because Rikers Island at this point is a plague. It's a cancer in our city. It's really holding a bunch of people who are innocent until proven dead. That's how I look at it. It's not innocent until proven guilty. It is innocent until you're found dead on Rikers Island. People are dying every day, and it's impossible to live like that and know that this is the consequence of being held on Rikers Island. You are at the mercy of the Department of Correction. And the mayor must do something about it. And he knows what to do. He better do it immediately. We need to invest in communities, reduce incarceration, and shut down Rikers immediately, even before 2027. He needs to shut it down. It's a horrible thing. It's a horrible place. It's the penal colony of the United States that is still operating. It's enough now. Enough. 6 years of Rikers Island, I've done it too, as a visitor. And I'm telling you, it is not good at all. It is the cancer that is plaguing the city and is growing. Cancers need to be eradicated, not fixed.
Got it. And thank you for that too, Anna. And Henry, you join us too, because this is also important to you. And so Henry, I know you're with the Catal Center. So Henry, talk to us about why this is important.
Well, sorry. Well, this is important to me for many reasons, mainly because of the fact that I am a brown and black person. You know what I'm saying? And I was wrongfully convicted in a way where the officers arrested me illegally. Right. So the thing is, we got people in prison, as they said, that's not even convicted of no crimes. And some of them are in there for illegally or for crimes they haven't done. And then it's petty crimes that people are dying for, where it's like your life is more precious. It should be handled with more care. Everyone's life on this planet should be handled with more care. You know what I'm saying? Because the fact is, if anybody was in these circumstances, they would not like it, and they'll be extremely uncomfortable as anyone else was, just as myself. And Rikers Island, when I was there, where medical alone is a difficult task to achieve, where you have to go through a series of really demanding that you get medical attention because they don't give it to you, and you could be hurting, you could be throwing up and everything, and all they'll do is come to you, look at you, be like, you're not dying, all right, we'll get to you. You know what I'm saying? And that's not the right way to treat anybody. And then how do you expect a person to act when they're not getting their needs demanded? You know what I'm saying? Like, medical attention, that's a human basic want and need, and they should get it. That's the whole point. They got custody and care. They supposed to take care of the individuals in there. And they don't even have nothing in there to aid those individuals in getting better in no way. I was there. They don't have nothing there for them to get better. They don't put nothing there for them to be changed, unless it's something negative because of what they're going through. They talk about the violence that's there, but the weapons that's coming in there is from the officers. The drugs that they own is coming from the officers. Officers is getting arrested and everything for weapons and drugs but nobody is really doing no time. It's like these guys got immunity. So if these guys is getting away with things without having to get in trouble or face accountability, then you can see that the big problem is the people that's in control. So Mayor Adams, he come from Brownsville. He come from where they just did a whole sweep in Brownsville where they took a bunch of youth, where they going, where they just filled up Rikers Island even more people, kids and everything. It don't make no sense, especially when you know people is dying there, especially when you know it's inhumane acts, especially when you know that officers is not even coming to work. It's undermanned. Even officers don't want to go there because of the hazards, because of the dangers. And they want to put more people in there? Like, come on, when we going to really wake up as a people? Because we need to stand up and speak on this because our loved ones in there, we're getting affected by this. Our pockets are getting drained by being there for our loved ones, and they're making it extremely difficult for us to do this in every way. And it needs to stop. Mayor Adams need to step up. Because the thing is, he knows what's happening. The reason why he became an officer, the reason why he became a person to uphold the law was to do that, but he's not doing that. So now I'm like, what happened? What has happened from the time when you said, I want to be there for my people that's around me because I see what's going on, to you getting there? And then it's like, what happened? Is it because of the fact you moved out the neighborhood because you're getting, now that you're one of their weapons, because the thing is, people are dying and getting killed and you behind this because you have the power to stop it, but you're not. You're not doing nothing that you said you was going to do for the people.
And thank you for that. And thank you for that too, Henry. And, you know, we want to turn to Darren and followed by Darren, obviously Melanie. But Darren, talk to us a little bit about receivership. I know there's a call by advocates to make sure that a receivership is in place because of the dysfunction that's happening on Rikers Island with unstaffed posts, people dying, et cetera, and the need to make sure a receivership is in place. Talk to our listening audience a little bit. What is a receivership and why it's important to put one in place?
Yeah, so, you know, so Freedom Agenda hasn't taken a position to, like, advocate for or against receivership. And, you know, a receivership basically, you know, may be able to cut through some of the inertia and corruption, you know, to alleviate the crisis on Rikers. But, you know, Rikers cannot be fixed. You know, it can't be reformed and it must be closed. And the plans to close it should be expedited. You know, DFC has not been able to safely manage the number of people in their custody, and the consequences have been grave and at times, too many times, deadly. So if the mayor hopes to get DOC into compliance with the dissent decree, which is, you know, the federal monitor, he should prioritize, as Melody stated, investments that reduce incarceration, as Anna mentioned, you know, like supportive housing and affordable housing overall, you know, treatment, youth services, and food employment. But, you know, no matter what this judge decides, you know, the judge that the federal monitor has over the Department of Corrections, the most important thing is to save lives right now and to reduce the number of people in DOC custody.
Thank you for that. And Melanie, you know, we think about, you know, is the mayor moving forward with the city's plan to shut down Rikers? I know that's something that was raised to some degree, but, you know, is he really on task? Folk are talking about 2027. It's supposed to shut down and be closed. We're hearing that we want it done immediately. What are some thoughts on that?
Absolutely. Thanks, Andre. So right now, the mayor has strayed away from the city's plan to shut down Rikers. And the reason why I say this is because under his watch, the jail population has gone up by nearly 600 people, and it will continue to go up. At the following our rally on December 13, there was a city council hearing about the crisis at Rikers that was being put on by city council members from the Committee on Criminal Justice. At this hearing, the Department of Corrections, the New York City Department of Corrections Commissioner Molina, he was testifying, just talking about what has happened. And he said it. He said that if nothing changes, the jail population is expected to increase by to increase to 7,000. And that is just unacceptable, really, really unacceptable, unacceptable. And the fact that he said that so nonchalantly, knowing that he's responsible for this as well as the mayor, is ridiculous. And so, and right now, we're up to nearly 6,000 people that are incarcerated at Rikers Island. And the only way to effectively shutter the island is by lowering the jail population. You heard it from everyone. The mayor needs to cut the number of people that are being held behind bars in New York City jails, and it's not happening. I mentioned it earlier, he's been blatantly attacking bail reform, even though we know how effective it has been in protecting poor black and brown families and communities. And so we're at a really, really critical point. We're at a crisis right now, and we need to make sure that the mayor stays to the plan to shut down Rikers. And the only way to do that is to hold him accountable. But as we stand right now, he is straying away from the plan. Even earlier this month, he was caught at a press conference talking about how he's thinking about a plan B in terms of shutting down Rikers. It's loud and clear. He does not care for shutting down Rikers. And what we have to do as a community is just hold him accountable. But that's kind of where we are right now.
Thank you for that, Melanie, too. And we have a couple more minutes left. Just some calls to action from Darren and others for people to get involved, right, in the movement to ensure that Rikers Island closes, right, and that the communities who are more impacted than ever by the crisis on Rikers Island get the resources that they need. So I'll start off with you, Anna, right? And maybe like 30 seconds or so, what are some calls to action, right, that you would like people to do to get involved?
Well, I would like to continue talking or to the mayor or rallying to the mayor's office make him understand that you cannot throw people that are mentally ill or people who have a drug addiction or people who are, they have youth, need youth services. You cannot just throw everybody in jail or Rikers Island to resolve the problem. Rikers Island is only going to get worse, and it doesn't resolve the problem. The mayor knows by having a receivership, you know that it's like putting a Band-Aid on a big wound. It may or may not resolve the problem temporarily, but that will show the failure that this mayor is facing. It's going to be a total failure for the mayor not to be able to control Rikers Island and to control our society problems. Our society is begging and asking for services for everyone who needs them. Rikers Island is not going to resolve the problem. And by increasing population of Rikers Island, he's only going to dig a hole to himself, the mayor, where he's going to end up in it himself. So we're going to rally and continue asking to close Rikers immediately, reduce the population to the point that they will shut down. And that's what we need to do. Continue rallying and showing that this is not working. It's not going to work with receivership. I personally don't believe it. But if he prefers to try that, the mayor, it will also be his biggest failure, I believe. We'll see what happens.
Thank you, Anna. And Henry, in 30 seconds, right, what are some call to actions? And then we'll go to Melanie, followed by Darren.
Well, some calls to action, I believe, is for our people to unify and get together and really try to come up with some solutions to trying to get a better message to the mayor, because he is accountable for these things and is just getting the message.
Thank you for that too. And Darren and Melanie, some calls to action.
Yeah, so I think the biggest thing here is just making sure that we hold the mayor accountable. He needs to cut the city's jail population, shut down Rikers, and invest in real community safety. And we all talked about what that looks like. We all talk about what our communities actually need and what our communities actually demand. And the truth is, we are suffering right now in a housing crisis, and people don't have a roof over the table, over their heads, and don't have food at the table. And so we need the mayor to really address the root problems in our communities, which is, you know, making sure that he invests in housing, healthcare, education, and jobs. And I think going back to Anna's comment about the receivership, the thing here is that with the receivership, we were actually on November 17, we were outside the court hearing in terms of whether or not a receivership was going to be granted and the power was going to be taken away from Mayor Adams in terms of what he can do at Rikers Island. The thing here is that Mayor Adams, his demographic, who he responds to is the NYPD. It's the correctional officers. He does not care about the people that are incarcerated at Rikers Island. He does not care about our communities. And so what the receivership here really was going to do is give people, especially the folks that are that the correctional officers and the staff there, more of a understanding, like, you need to do what's expected of you. You need to do what's right and actually care for the community, not be out AWOL, not be out here doing police brutality, getting away with so much corruption. And so it offered that kind of perspective of it. But like Anna said, like, at the end of the day, the person that is accountable in terms of shutting down Rikers is the mayor, and he right. needs to do what's right. And so one of the things for the listeners is that you can definitely tune in into our website. So we're at catalcenter.org. We have a petition to around this fight. And so you're welcome to reach out. And also my number is 516-588-0127. Y'all can reach out if you have any more questions and if you would like to get in the fight as well. Thank you sure. so much.
Thank you. And Darren, as we close, yes. right, for this segment, just yeah. some final thoughts.
Yeah, quickly, you know, we have to organize to build people power to get our demands met. You know, you can contact me at FA, that's F as in freedom, A as in agenda, FA at urbanjustice.org, and call me, you know, tell your family to get involved at 646-907-9848. That's 646-907-9848.
Darren, Melanie, Anna, Henry, we want to thank you all for joining us for this segment, obviously, and continue to do the work that you all are doing. We will have you back here and on the count for some more updates as it relates to Rikers Island, some of the other work that you all are doing. So thank you all so much. And so now we're going to transition. You're listening to 99.5 FM WBAI. This radio show is called On the Count, the Prison and Criminal Legal System Reform Report. My name is Andre Ward. I'm joined by Harmony and Mahdi. We're going to transition to our next segment, and Harmony will take it over. Harmony and Mahdi will take it over from there. And from there, we'll have some updates. But we want to thank our guests for joining us again. And I'll pass it over to Mahdi.
Thank you for that, Brother Andre. So, como él dijo, usted está oyendo a WBAI 99.5 FM. Y nosotros estuvimos cubriendo todos los reportes de la muerte de las 19 personas en la isla de Rikers. So, with that being said, and a previous show and guest, I want to introduce to you a powerful, powerful woman in criminal legal reform who has firsthand experienced the injustices and is taking severe action. I am so proud to have her on our show. And most importantly, her and her family are making history. I introduce to you, ladies and gentlemen, sister, is it Sharon or Sharon? Salam?
Sharon.
Sharon, thank you. And she is the mother of Yusef Salam, who's one of the exonerated five. And I'm going to let her introduce everything that's going to take place on Monday. How are you doing, Sister Salam?
Well, I'm doing very well. I'm a little exhausted from the years of struggle getting to this point, but I'm glad we are here and we are making waves. So on Monday, there's going to be a gate naming ceremony that's called the Gate of the Exonerated. Gate of the Exonerated. Let me say it one more time. Gate of the Exonerated. And that is a gate that is supposed to speak to the issues of exonerations and prisons and incarcerations and all types of things related to that particular type of population. And when you hear those types of things said, gate of the exoneration, it's like, you know, to me, it's a very exciting thing. It's a name that was thought up by the Central Park Five. They're the ones who thought up this particular name, Gate of the Exonerated, because they wanted this issue to cover more than just them. They wanted it to be on the forefront of our thinking and the forefront of prison reform. You know, this gate, if you don't know, is the first gate naming that is, 100 years or over 100 years ago, the first gate naming. So it is a historic event in Central Park. It is on 110th Street between Fifth Avenue and Malcolm X Boulevard, the old Lenox Avenue, and right across the street from the what was the Lincoln Correctional Facility, and right in front of the Dana Center in Central Park. So we're hoping that people will come and see what's happening at the gate. There's going to be a plaque that would be there also, and there's going to be a website associated with that. And the website is going to contain educational materials that are age appropriate for school children to teach about incarceration, exoneration, and give people a fourth way in terms of how do we go from here. You know, it's really something to think that in 1989, my son, Yusuf Salam, along with others, were arrested for involved in the Central Park jogger case. That case was exonerated in 2002. And it took 10 years to work through the processes of getting compensation, getting any kind of awareness regarding this. And I look around today and I see that there are a lot of people who come up to me and they don't really even know that they're exonerated. They don't know that they're all out. You know, because part of it is that the majority of the press involved in this case was there for the conviction of these innocent boys. And they're there for the convictions of your innocent loved ones, you know. But where are they when you're exonerated? One take and then they're gone, poof, into the night. We have to make this issue of exonerations and wrongful incarceration of innocent people, this is a national issue. It's not just affecting the Central Park Five, the Exonerated Five, as we are calling them today. It affects all of us in Black and Brown communities. And it's a systemic problem that needs to be addressed. We cannot no longer, let me say that again, because I want to be clear in case I fumble. We can no longer look at this as a every now and then event. This is systemic. It's everywhere. It's in all of our communities of color. If we don't know someone, someone next door to us does. We need to fix this problem. Fix it, fix it, fix it. We need to fix it today.
Yes, we do. It is, like you mentioned, a national crisis. Yes. That is unspoken of, that is unheard of. Mm-hmm. And again, it's so honorable for your son who has first time experienced the broken justice system, or lack of justice system, I should say, to share the title of to not limit the gate to the Exonerated Five.
Right. Wasn't it? I thought that was magnificent, because that speaks to the bigger issue that's involved. And it brings in all of our families, not just them, but all of them. Because when a person is put in jail on a wrongful conviction, or even if they did the crime, their families are involved in that. You know what I'm saying? That their families are paying the commissary, they're paying the phone bills, they're going back and forth to visit if they're able. That their children are separated. You know, family members die while people are incarcerated. It's a heartbreaking situation that no one really understands unless you've lived it. And when you live it, you can see the reality of what's going on and the impact that it has on so many different lives. You know, it's unbelievable. The cost of this, you know, and I think, and I say to myself, gee, wow, in the third grade, how old are you in the third grade? Let me see, 6, 7, 8, you're 8 or 9 years old in the third grade. They're already deciding how many more prison beds they need for you, not how many more colleges they need to open up so that you can be the doctors and lawyers of tomorrow, but how many more prison beds. That's part of the systemic change that needs to be worked out so that we can fix this problem. As long as people see us as worthy of nothing but figuring out how many more prison beds, they don't see that this is a systemic problem. They don't see that some of those people that they're putting in the electric chair might truly be innocent. They don't see that. They don't see the harm that is being done within our communities. And it's a great, great harm, because I still remember this just like it was yesterday. It's never going to go away from my mind. It's something that will live with me forever. And it's going to live with all those people who have this problem. But we can make it change and we can make it work much, much better. But we need to say to ourselves, this is a problem that needs to be fixed.
Indeed, indeed. I'm going to pass it over to my sister Harmony.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Sister Salam. I mean, I'm just sitting here in awe because you are one powerful mom. And thank you so much for being with us on the show at WBAI this morning. By the way, you're listening to WBAI 99.5 on the count this morning. And we are with Sister Salam, and who is Yosef Salam's mom and also the mom of all of the exonerated. Is that right? She's here with us this morning.
And you can get over on the Zoom call. I'm trying to be on this Zoom call.
Yes, you can get over to the 5th annual Heal the Land Walk prayer visual this morning, right after our show.
And I'm going right out there to it. Come on out and join me. I'm going to be walking with those people. I'm one of them.
Yes, 2522 7th Avenue, 146 in Harlem, New York. Join Minister Joanne Santana, Central Park 5, Exonerated 5, their families, and Senator Cordell over there at, again, 2522 7th Avenue, 146. You can run over there right after our show here on WBAI. Yeah. Then we also have an opportunity to be at the gate of the Exonerated 5. We want to be clear so you guys can be there on Monday, December 19th. 2022, gathering at 10:30, starting at 11. Be on time, folks. 110th Street and 5th Avenue, Malcolm X Boulevard. The first time in 100 years, as Sister Salam has said this morning, and we will be out there marching and supporting for not just now. Check it out. She said it already. Check it out. Not just Exonerated 5, but all exonerated across the nation, lifting up what should have been lifted up a long time ago in these 20 years, but 10 years, but also lifting up those who are inside, outside, that are, listen to this, representing people who were convicted and exonerated of crimes that they did not commit. Innocent people who are still in prison waiting for exoneration. And those free for fighting to be exonerated. In their names, we will be walking. And guess what? After that, you can come on to the Africa Center at 1280 5th Avenue in Harlem, because there will be a reception as we celebrate. Then at the Sean Bird Center for Research of Black Culture on Monday, December 19 at 5 p.m., 515 Malcolm X Boulevard in Harlem. And we'll ask Monty to put this up on our website, so you'll know where parts of WBAI folks on the count will be, so that you can celebrate with us. Sister Salam, I want to talk just a little bit, one question about being a mom, being part of that family, because we know that the people who are inside had to suffer through incarceration, suffered through being searched, suffered through being away from their family, suffered, as we saw on the show, being hurt and harmed on the inside, and then mentally and physically going through what they had to go through. But talk a little bit about being a mom with a child that you know did not do something, and representing the families of those that you know that did not have to did not do something, and how you also was hurt and harmed by that process.
Okay, I'm going to talk about this, but I'm going to say this first. When you join me at the prayer walk, Heal the Land, call that number so you'll know where we are. We're going to be starting on 146th Street. So call that number so you'll know where to join us on the road. Now, yes, when this thing happened to me, I was like all mothers who have children, you who love their children, and all of us do. When we have these babies, we don't wake up after we have them in the hospitals and say, oh, wow, this one's going to jail. No, we take these children home. We're not having children for jail. We're having children because we love children and we want to have these children, no matter how many of them we have. It's something we want. And when we see their little faces, we love them. And it's kind of a automatic thing. I can't describe it, but mothers know how it is. And fathers probably have this same kind of feeling. They might not necessarily want to admit it, but when they see their children for the first time, they know that it's something that binds you to this child. And nowhere in your frame of mind are you thinking, gee, this child is going to end up in jail. You know, you try to do the best you can for your child to thick and thin. Whatever it is that you can do, whether you are on public assistance, whether you're rich, whether you're middle class, you try to do the best you can with what it is you have so that your child is successful. You can go outside sometime and you can see parents all dressed kind of down like, but the child, the hair's together, the bows are there, the shoes are shining, even if they have to shine them with a biscuit like we used to do in the old days. They sparkling, and we are showing our love, because that is what's important to us, is our children. And when this happened to me, it was a heartbreaking moment. It was like something was torn out of my soul. Oh, my goodness. It's indescribable. It's indescribable. And to find out that when these things happen, oftentimes you're all by yourself in your belief and your knowledge that a person is innocent, and your willingness to kind of fight for this person is hard to find help sometimes, depending on the case. Because when this happened in this particular case, there was a Black woman who was raped. Was it the same day or the day before? And she was taken up to the roof nearby, raped, beat up, and thrown off the roof. But her story did not make the news. But the newsmaker was the jogger. She was white. And the people who were supposed to have done this to her were people of color. That's the newsmaker. And it's unfortunate, even to this day, I don't even know if they ever really investigated or looked for the person that did that to that Black poor woman. Took her up to the roof, raped her, and threw her off. We've got to really look at our justice system and make some changes so that we are all treated fairly. I felt I was being unfairly treated. Every day in the newspaper, people talking about how bad the children was, how bad this one was, somebody talking about how this one was this one was that, this one was the other, and people who didn't even know us, didn't know our children. It's unreal how people just come out of the woodwork and say stuff, not even knowing you. But they know you in a way because you're Black. And that's the way they know all Black people. And even today, there are people who are getting the elevator and grab their pocketbooks because a Black person has gotten in the elevator. They across the street because a Black group is walking down the street and they see them. This is an ingrained piece that we need to ingrain out. And it's hard to get rid of it because it's so entrenched in our psyche. And oftentimes, people will tell you that, you know, They're not racist. They're not fearful. They don't know where it's coming from. It's so deep down, so deep. But it's in us, and we need to figure out how to not only get it out of people of color, but out of white people too, out of Chinese people too, out of Native American too. We're all one people. And we need to figure out some kind of way that make all one people work so that certain groups of people are not held accountable for stuff they didn't do. When I go downstairs from my apartment today, I'm going to see a lot of police in my community because I'm in a community that's highly policed. I live around a lot of Black people. We're the people that's going to jail because there are so many people here who are looking for us to put us in jail for minor things, for big things, for no things. And when they do these things to us, we have in many terms, nowhere to turn. We have nowhere to call. We can't call the Ghostbusters to come forward and show the light on what has been done to us. We have to go through that trauma. I had to go through that trauma. And there are many mothers like me who had to go through that trauma. Many fathers who had to go through that trauma. Many people who were part of my circumstance. Many of those family members died. It's sad. They didn't live for the exoneration. So, you know, how do you let them know, and you hope that you can say to them in some way, you know, finally, the truth came out. Finally. And it needs to come out for so many more people who are incarcerated. Right now, there are, what is it? Oh, I don't want to even guess at the billion or million people that's incarcerated throughout this country. We have more people in jail than anywhere in the world. And we do less to prepare them for reentry than anywhere in the world. We kill more people in jail than anywhere in the world. That says something about us. Tells people who we are. And it says we need to change our way of thinking, change our system. Because on the other hand, for the people who are coming home, they are coming home in a way, but they've not been, let's say, re-educated. They've not been enhanced. They've not been taught trades so that they could go on and live their lives, so that they could build families, so that they can become part of our communities. All they are being taught for the most part is to fill something up called three strikes and you're out.
Out. Yes, ma'am. Absolutely. 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 Thank you so much. I'm going to punt it back to my sister, Madi.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, Sister Salam. Thank you for being with us and enlightening our listeners. For those individuals that want to learn more about the curriculum of exoneration, please call Justice for the Wrongfully Incarcerated at 646-685-4521. That number is 646-685-4521, the Justice for the Wrongfully Incarcerated. And Sister Salam, I'm speechless after hearing.
I was speechless when I realized that this was the system that was in our country. I thought this was the land of the free and the home of the brave.
So many of us think that, and unfortunately, there's another story to it, right?
Yes, it is. It's a learning process, but we're going to move forward, and we, as we did in the past many, many years ago, we're going to make this country all it can be.
That's right. As I always say, pa'lante lo moviemo, forward we move. Mm-hmm. Thank you again, Sister Salam. We'll definitely have you back on our show in the future.
Thank you.
With all of your projects and everything you're doing, and keep being that fighting force for your son and all the others that do not have a fighting force.
Yes, we need to give them all a voice.
Yes, and as we say in closing, Yes, indeed. Brother Andre, do you have anything you'd like to add?
No, we're going to close out, Marty.
Okay, great. So as we say in closing, don't give in, don't give up, don't give out. Stand tall in spite of it all and stay on the count.
On the count.
Thank you.
Yes, on the count. Yes. And thank you all so much for having me. On the count.
See you Monday.
All right. I'll be there. All right now.
On the count.
The U.S. prison system incarcerates approximately 2.3 million people, the highest number of any industrialized nation, while prisons remain one of the largest industries in the country.
On Monday, December 19th at 10:30 a.m., The Gate, the Exonerated Five, formerly known as the Central Park Five, used to enter in Central Park, will be named The Gate of the Exonerated. The ceremony is at 110th Street between 5th Avenue and Malcolm X Boulevard in Harlem.
You are all welcome to come and bring your families. The members of the Five, with the exception of Antoine McCray, who will not be able to attend, we're all going to be there. Our families are going to be there. The boys, now men, are going to be there. And we're hoping that you all come out and join us. It's going to be a great time.
Again, December 19th at 10:30 a.m., 110th Street between 5th Avenue and Malcolm X Boulevard. It's the first time in 100 years that a gate will be named in Central Park. This gate of the exonerated represents people who were convicted and exonerated of crimes they did not commit. Innocent people who are still behind bars waiting for exoneration. And for those freed, fighting to exonerate their names.
Yo, this is G-Love on WBAI, New York, New York.
I'm Celeste Katz Marston.
And I'm Jeff Simmons.
We host Driving Forces here on WBAI.
We bring you thoughtful conversations about what really matters to New Yorkers on politics and public policy.
And we make time to hear from you, our listeners, not just during the holidays, but all year round.
To keep these critical conversations on the air, we need your help.
From now until New Year's, we're building up our funds to pay rent on our broadcast tower at 4 Times Square.
Go to towerfund.wbai.org today to help us keep free speech radio alive in the greatest city in the world. That's towerfund.wbai.org. WBAI is getting its financial house in order. Help us keep our signal as strong and as clear as our commitment to bringing you the best in news, music, and culture.
Give to WBAI this holiday season. Be heard.
Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and she's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gone to stay. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone, and this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away, and I know, I know. Sunshine when she's gone. the darkness every